In the third Aliyah of Parsha Shmos, we read that Moshe has grown up. Although we've already been told that, so Rashi explains that this reference here, Vayigdal Moshe, is actually to his stature rather than his age. The Ramban explains that he grew unnaturally fast, because normally the way this pasuk begins, Vayihi Bayamim Haheim, is a reference to things happening at the same time. So if he's already an adult, apparently he grew unnaturally fast. There's a little bit of a discussion as to how old he is at this point. The Midrashim have different opinions. He was 20 or 40 or maybe not even 12. But perhaps the idea of his growth here, of becoming a gadol, is really a reference to what happens right after this. Vayetze el achav vayar b'sivil asam. He went out among his brothers. The Abravanel writes that he heard that he was Jewish and he wanted to go out and learn about the Jewish people. The Malbim writes that it's especially impressive that he did that, that he didn't abandon his roots when he had luxury and he could have stayed where he was. But especially the idea of vayar b'sivil asam, that he looked and he saw their suffering. And Rashi writes over here, Nasan Einav Vilibo Lios Meitzar Aleihem, that he set his eyes and his heart towards having anguish on their behalf. And this was an intentional choice to empathize with them. Rav David Zvi Hoffman notes in his commentary that it says Vayar twice, because it says Vayar immediately after B'siv Losam, and that repetition is meant to convey that the second time he's looking, it's with the extra rachmanis that he developed from the first time. And Znai L'Torah Vutzgarav understands that the word vayar should really be translated as understanding, based on the pasuk in the first parak of Koheles. And what we have here is a reference to what could be called effective empathy, to an intentional effort to try to feel the suffering of those around him. And that is what we mean when we say that Moshe became a gadol. So what he sees is an Egyptian hitting a Jewish slave, and he looks this way and that way. Vayar ki einish, he sees that there's no one there. Rav Sham Shmuel Hirsch comments that the Torah emphasizes this here in order to show us that he's not reckless, he's not looking to be a hero, but he sees that he has to act. Vayaches ha-mitzri, he strikes the Mitzri. There's some discussion about whether he was actually trying to kill him. Rav Sadia Gaon understands that he wasn't trying to, but that he died anyway. Whether or not that makes him a murderer halachically is also a discussion. The Chasam Sofer, in his commentary to Parshas Truma, understands based on this that this is why he was disqualified from the kahuna. There normally is a halacha that a kohen shaharig es hanefesh, a kohen who has killed someone, is excluded from certain functions. Whether that includes somebody who kills in a justified context is a subject of machlokas. Here the Chasam Sofer understands that because of what Moshe does here, he is disqualified from the kahuna. Following this, he goes out and he sees Shnei Anashim Ivrim Nitzim. He sees two Jews fighting, and the Gemara in Nidarim and Daf Tamach Dalet Amud Beis tells us that every such reference is always to Dasan V'Aviram. And presumably the point is here to emphasize that this is a midah of theirs, this is a characteristic, this isn't simply an isolated incident. And he gets involved once again, and he tries to intervene, and the Torah tells us that he addressed the Rasha, the evildoer. And based on this, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Handaf Nun Ches Amud Beis, tells us that there is a special status to someone who lifts his hand in violence against someone else, even though he hasn't necessarily actually hit him. We know that there's a prohibition to strike someone else, that we know from elsewhere in the Torah, Lo Yosef, that when there's a prohibition to give an additional makkah, when the shliach of Bezdin is supposed to issue makos, he's not supposed to go past the 40 that he's instructed to give. So kal v'chomer, somebody who's not authorized to strike, is not allowed to hit at all. So that prohibition is learned from over there. But here we have a prohibition even to raise one's hand in violence, even without hitting. And one who does so is called a Rasha. So it's a discussion as to what exactly is the nature of this issur. If you're not actually making contact, it's a little bit hard to determine what the nature of the prohibition is. Some suggest that it could be some type of a chas yishir, of an incomplete prohibition, but that's not an easy explanation because you're not actually even making contact at all. There are others who suggest that maybe this is what you might call a siag min haTorah, that this is a protective measure from the Torah itself, made to prevent you from actually making contact. Others suggest that maybe this is a type of onos dvarim, that this comes from the fact that there is a fear that is inflicted upon the subject of such treatment, and maybe that's the nature of the prohibition. We could also suggest that the reason a person who lifts his hand in violence is called a rasha is because in doing so, he has changed the nature of the relationship. So until this happens, they're talking, they may be talking heatedly, but this is a relatively civil interaction. Once somebody threatens to hit, even before he actually hits, he's transforming the nature of the interaction. And it makes sense that he should be called a rasha because he is completely changing the environment. And it is in that context that we find that he is now given a psul edus, he is disqualified from testimony, as is generally the case of somebody who is called a rasha. And it's a discussion as to whether this is a psul derais or a psul derabanan. The Ramah does quote this idea that a individual who raises his hand against another is puzzled to be made, is disqualified from testimony, although he understands it to be a psul midrabanan. The Torah Tamima notes that on the language of the pasuk lama sakeh re'echa, Rashi adds rasha kamoscha, a rasha like you. And the implication is, the Torah Tamima notes, that even if one could have thought that maybe there's a justification in hitting this person because he is a rasha, that would only be true if the one doing the hitting is himself a tzaddik. If the one striking is himself a rasha, so then they're on the same level, and any license that could have come for the hitting goes away. Reb Chaim Kanievsky commented, based on that, quoted in the Sefer Yad Binyamin of Rav Binyamin Elyashiv, who's Rav Chaim Kanievsky's brother-in-law, that this is similar to an idea that we find in Hilchos Lashon Hara, that sometimes you'd have a license to speak Lashon Hara L'Toeles, but that's assuming righteousness on the part of the speaker. If the one speaking is just as guilty as the subject, so then such license wouldn't exist. And the topic of Lashon Hara is relevant to their reaction, because when Moshe confronts them, so they respond, "Are you going to kill us just as you've killed the Mitzri?" And Moshe's reaction to that is, "Achei noda hadavar," that apparently the matter is known. And Rashi understands what that means is not just the literal translation, that it's known to them what I did, but it's known to me that these people are not worthy of being redeemed. And the Medrash explains that the Jews were redeemed for four things, because they didn't change their language or their dress or their name, and also that they didn't speak Lashon Hara. So the idea that there's such a focus on Lashon Hara, apparently even one incident of Lashon Hara, Svarim explain that Lashon Hara is destructive. And at a time of great crisis, the unity of the Jewish people is especially important. And if they're going to disparage each other, so that is going to create greater challenges and make it harder for them to be subject to any kind of rescue and redemption. And perhaps there is an additional perspective here as well, that one could have said that the fact that they are aware that Moshe had killed somebody, maybe it's reasonable to talk about that. That could have been considered Lashon Hara L'Toeles, that if somebody is capable of killing someone else, so that's potentially a danger, and it might be reasonable to talk about that. But the Avera of Lashon Hara is not necessarily about the facts that are being related. It's about the perspective that is behind the way the facts are related. And here, Moshe is right to be upset, because yes, it's true that he killed someone, but he did so in defense of the Jewish people. And here he sees that Dathan and Aviram are talking about what he did and portraying it as if he's likely to kill them. And that's the essence of Lashon Hara, not simply saying over what happened, but portraying it in a negative way, in an unfair fashion, as if the fact that he killed the Mitzri makes it likely that he's going to kill them. That's the essence of Lashon Hara. That's not only reporting something that happened, but placing it in an unfair, negative context. And Moshe hears that and is very concerned. People who are ready to talk like that are not going to be ready for redemption.